Today's podcast is sponsored by RadRx, your source for quality online education for interventional and diagnostic radiology coding, taught by subject matter expert Stacy Buck. For more information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Struggling to learn interventional radiology coding? If so, RadRx has the perfect solution for you. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology online training program. In this program, interventional radiology coding expert Stacy Buck breaks down the complexities of interventional radiology coding in easy-to-understand terms so you can grasp this complex specialty. Through her course, Stacy has assisted many coders with little or no interventional radiology coding experience in successfully passing the CIRC exam on the first attempt. For additional information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. And now, here's your host, Stacy Buck.
Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says. I am your host, Stacy Buck. Thank you for tuning in. In today's episode, I'm going to share some tips for developing a career plan. In the very first episode of my podcast, I shared about my career journey and how I accidentally fell into the HIM profession. And while that may happen for some, for most, it does not. It actually takes hard work to break into the profession. So everyone should spend some time on career planning. Over the years, I've seen lots of people who have finished coding programs and HIM programs who are completely frustrated and discouraged. And it's mainly because of difficulty in finding their first job, also unrealistic salary expectations, and even costs associated with being in the profession. And what I have observed in many cases is that people simply have not done their due diligence concerning the differences in educational programs, job requirements, salary, and all costs associated with being a member of the profession. And all of these things should be considered in career planning. Now, when we think about career planning, usually we think about new graduates, those that are just starting out in their career, that those individuals should definitely have a career plan. But career planning is not just for new professionals. If you have already been in the coding or in the health information management profession for a while, you might be thinking you don't need a career plan, but career planning is important at all stages and all ages. And the reason why is because the healthcare landscape is constantly changing. And in large part, that's due to technology. That has had a huge impact on our industry. Also, offshoring. There are a lot of positions, a lot of job functions that are overseas and will continue to go overseas. And so it's important to think ahead and examine trends and look at where the industry is headed. Maybe you love what you're doing now, but will your current position still be in demand 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Or how will that position look different from what it does now if it still exists? So it's very important to take that into consideration. You know, myself and my business today looks very different from what it did when I first started out in 2008. Because of technology, computer-assisted coding, and because of offshoring, that dramatically shifted the focus of my business. The segment of my business where I used to make the most money was in diagnostic radiology, doing diagnostic radiology coding. You know, it was outsourced to my company, also backlog coding for diagnostic radiology. And then when computer-assisted coding came onto the scene, it boosted the productivity of coders, so there were not as many opportunities to step in and do the backlog coding support. And then the coding itself for diagnostic radiology was being pushed overseas because it's less expensive to have that function being done overseas. So that segment of my business pretty much almost completely went away. It is extremely rare that anybody even requests a quote for those services anymore. And really the only diagnostic radiology work I'm doing is for auditing and a little bit of education. And then my business shifted more to interventional radiology, and that's the majority of what I do. And even in the interventional radiology space, with the coding and auditing, again, just with, you know, providers looking at cost of outsourcing, some of that is going overseas. I then shifted to online education. And so I am now making most of my income in my business from my online education more than I am from any of the coding business or consulting business. And so it has shifted, and I have had to change my services and what I offer to keep going and to keep a viable business. So when you're thinking of a career plan, one of the first things I would say when developing a career plan is think about your personal goals. You really want your career plan to align with any personal goals that you've set for yourself in your personal life. That's very important. You cannot ignore those areas of interest in your personal life. And so for students and new grads, a big part of career planning is figuring out what you want to do. There are so many options out there for you. When looking at the health information management profession, there are so many different areas that you can go into. There are so many job titles that are out there. I've been in the HIM profession since 1992, and it is mind-blowing to see how the profession has grown and all the opportunities that are out there in so many non-traditional areas that didn't exist when I first entered the profession. And then, of course, medical coding is always a popular choice as well, because a lot of people think that they can sit at home and be a medical coder, and that's why it's a popular career choice. And while that is possible to work from home being a medical coder, there are obviously challenges in finding coding jobs. Any of you who've been looking, if you're new to the profession, you know that that's a challenge. And those remote jobs are even more challenging to find for new professionals. I think with COVID, we may see that shift a little bit because companies have had to learn to do things differently, but there are still challenges out there. So students and new grads, your biggest hurdle, I think, is figuring out what you want to do and then developing a plan for what you want to do. And then for seasoned professionals, those of you who've been in the coding profession for a while or the HIM profession for a while, again, you need to think about trends in the industry. Where is the industry going? If you're close to retirement, then you probably don't need to have a plan on what you're going to do within the field if you plan on retiring soon. But if you know me, I will be turning 47 next month. And so for me, I probably have another 20 years to go in the profession. I need to think beyond where we are today and then what things are going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now. And I have some ideas on things that I want to do to expand my business and grow my business. Some of you may be listening to this podcast and you may have been in HIM for a while, and you may want to do something new. Maybe the current position that you're doing right now, you're just not into it, you're not feeling challenged, but you don't want to go earn another degree. That's a lot of time, it's a lot of money, but you want to do something new in the profession. Well, you should develop a career plan to make a transition into a different type of position within the profession. Some people may even be thinking about transitioning out of health information management and going into a completely different field. That's not uncommon. What I see a lot of in health information management is I see a lot of people in other professions who choose health information management or coding as their second profession for the second half of their life or their second act. And then I also see a lot of people moving out of HIM, moving out of healthcare, and doing something completely different for their second career, for their second act in life. And you know, people always ask me, you know, what would you do if you weren't doing what you're doing now? Like, what's your ideal? Like, what would be your next job, your next thing that you want to do in life? And I always tell people, if I had my choice, I would want to be a kept woman. I'd want to be a trophy wife. And they laugh at me and they think it's funny. I'm like, no, I'm totally being serious. I'm like, if I didn't have to work, I'm like, that would be my next career choice. So, I mean, I say that kind of tongue in cheek. I mean, I am joking. I can't see myself not doing something. That's not me. That's not who I am. So anyway, it's important to have a career plan, whether you are new to the profession or whether you are a seasoned HIM professional. Whether you are new to the profession or you're an experienced HIM professional or medical coder, ask yourself, what is your dream job? What would you absolutely love to do? And when you're answering this question, assume that you have all of the resources necessary to make that dream come true. That's something that I want you to spend some time thinking about outside of this podcast. What does your ideal day look like when you wake up in the morning if you could plan your ideal day? And I think that is very helpful in getting clarity concerning your career and also your personal life and how your career fits in with your personal life. We cannot neglect our personal goals outside of our career. And then in addition to asking yourself, what is your dream job? Who is your dream employer? I know some people not only have that ideal job in their mind, but they already know who they want to go work for. And it's important to answer these questions because it's going to help you in developing your career plan. And the number one piece of advice that I'm going to give you regarding career planning is research, research, research. You should spend a lot of time gathering information. Very important. If you have not yet chosen an educational program, then you're going to spend a lot of time researching educational programs, obviously. If you're already in the profession, then you're going to come at your research a little bit differently, but I'm going to share with you all of the different areas that you should research when developing a career plan. So once you decide what you want to do, what that dream job is, you need to figure out how do you get there? What is the logical progression? Most people right out of an HIM program, for example, are not going to be hired as an HIM director. Is it possible? Does it happen? Yes. But is that the norm? Absolutely not. So you would need to figure out what is an entry-level position that will eventually get me to my goal of being an HIM director. Or maybe you want to be a director of revenue cycle if that's an area that interests you, or you want to get into some aspect of compliance, or you just want to be a medical coder. Well, AHIMA has a tool called the AHIMA Career Map. And if you go to Google and put in AHIMA Career Map, you will be able to find it. And this is just one tool that you can use for the HIM profession and also for medical coding. And it's laid out into four main areas of HIM. And then within each area, it shows you entry-level positions, mid-level positions, advanced, and then master-level positions within that particular area of health information management. So that gives you an idea of job titles that you can look for that are entry level, mid level, advanced, and master level, as I mentioned. That is a good starting point to take a look at that career map, whether you are new to the profession or whether you've even been in the profession for a while. That may be helpful. Then, once you decide what you want to do, what your dream job is, you want to look at the qualifications for the particular job that you want. And that can be done simply by searching job listings for related job titles. That's where you will start. So you'll ultimately start with your dream job, looking at what the qualifications are and the requirements are. Then from there, as you dig in more and then you try to figure out entry level positions on that path, then obviously you would also look for those qualifications as well for some of the lower level positions that will lead up to that higher position for you. So some tools that are out there, AHIMA, they have a Career Assist Job Bank. You can search through their job listings there. AAPC also has a medical coding jobs database on their website. You can search through medical coding jobs there. There's also a website called codersdirect.com. And that can be very helpful to you if you want to pursue a career in medical coding, because you can actually pop onto that website and put in the specific credentials and see what positions are available to people with specific credentials. So that's like a neat way to search with codersdirect.com. And then of course you have Indeed and you have the other larger job search websites that you can go to. But once you get an idea of job titles and related job titles, that's where you want to start. You want to start looking at these job openings, see the required education, see the required credentials, and look for the required skill sets, outside of just the degree and the credentials. You want to take a look at that. You also want to pay attention to required education. Some positions may require a certification only, and they don't require a degree. A lot of medical coders don't have a college degree. They simply have a high school diploma, and then they have a coding certification. Some positions will require a college degree, either associate's level, bachelor's level, or master's level. So you want to see that dream job. What level of education do I need to attain to help me reach that dream job? And then with educational programs, this is something where you really need to spend a lot of time researching education programs. This is where, unfortunately, I see a lot of people who are trying to enter the profession get tripped up and may regret the choices that they have made on educational programs, particularly with medical coding. There are a lot of entities out there that offer medical coding programs, and not all medical coding programs are created equal. Some are very, very expensive, and they do not adequately prepare you for coding, and a lot of their students have a hard time finding jobs after they complete the program. I usually tell people to look for KHIM accredited programs. Those KHIM is associated with HIMA, and they have requirements that educational programs have to meet. If you're looking to get into medical coding, my personal recommendation is to tell those who are interested, look for a community college that offers a coding certificate program that is KHIM accredited, and go through that program. You don't necessarily have to earn an associate's degree at that level if you don't want to, but the nice thing about going through a coding certificate program in a college is if you want to continue, then all of those credits are going to count towards your associate's degree. So you're very close to earning an associate's degree once you finish your coding education program. So that's something that you should think about. Obviously, if you're looking at management positions, director level positions and higher, then you're talking about bachelor's degrees or master's degrees, and a lot of cases are going to be required for those positions. So you want to make sure that you understand, you know, what the required degree is, and then you want to come up with a plan for earning that degree and then choosing your education wisely. There are so many options out there now. So many programs are online. Just buyer beware on a lot of programs. Mainly, like I said, look for KHIM accreditation. And then also when you are choosing schools outside of that, outside of a college, ask whether or not credits are transferable. The problem is you have a lot of people going to private schools and paying a large amount of money and then decide that they want to make the jump and go over and earn a college degree. And then none of the work that they did at that school is transferable for college credit. So you really, really, really want to choose wisely. I know it can be tempting to pay a large amount of money to get through something quickly because you feel it's the best path, but it's not necessarily the best path. You'll also want to research required credentials for the positions that you're looking for. Most of you who are listening, if not all of you, are members of AHIMA or AAPC. And so those are the credentials that you're going to want to look at. You're going to want to research for the job that you want. Are AHIMA credentials preferred? Are AAPC credentials preferred? Or do they give equal weight to both organizations? There are a lot of job positions. As long as you're credentialed through one organization where it pertains to the job, then that's sufficient. Some have a preference for one over the other. That's something you want to look for. Or there might be another organization with a specialty credential. For me, because I'm in radiology specifically, I'm credentialed through the Radiology Coding Certification Board. So that's something additional for the specialty that I'm in. So you want to look at the required credentials for the job and you want to make a plan to earn those credentials. So you need to look at the prerequisites for sitting for those exams, know those prerequisites, and then come up with a plan. And this is also why going to a KHIM accredited program is very important for health information management, because you have to graduate from a KHIM accredited program to sit for the RHIA or RHIT exam. So that is very important. So make sure to always do your homework on your educational programs. You also want to look at the required experience for the position that you ultimately want to be in. And then, as I said, once you find that dream job and ultimately where you want to be, then you also want to go back and look at the positions that will lead you down that path and then look at those skill sets there. So if experience is required in a job, you want to research which positions are stepping stones to get you to that ultimate destination. You also want to look at required skills for a particular job. We have what are called soft skills and we have what are called hard skills. So hard skills would be that you're proficient in Excel. You know, that's one example. Soft skills would be that you have experienced public speaking. You have the ability to simplify complex problems, like those types of things. So you want to look for those in the job descriptions and job listings. And then you want to focus on developing those skills as well. If you've already been working in another area, another industry, and you're coming into HIM or coding, you know, look for transferable skills. You may have a lot of skills that are now transferable to a job in the HIM space, in the coding space. So once you do all this research, well, what do you already have, obviously, based on what you found in doing your research? What qualifications do you already have? What education do you have? Credentials, experience, those other required skills, those soft skills, those hard skills. And then what do you need? And then you want to develop a plan with specific goals for mapping out where you need to go and then having a timeline of when you're going to accomplish each milestone on your plan. One other thing that you should definitely research is research salary ranges. I think that a lot of times when people are starting educational programs, they are given information about salaries that can be earned in the field. And sometimes I feel that it sets unrealistic expectations. You have to remember that schools are trying to enroll you in their programs, so they're going to give you best case scenario. It's in their best interest, to their bottom line, that they give you best case scenario for when you come out of school. And a lot of new graduates, whether you're finishing a coding program or you finished a degree program, a lot of new graduates become very disillusioned when they see some of the starting salaries in the field. So you want to make sure that you research salary ranges for the positions that you are considering. AHIMA does a salary survey. You can, again, go out to Google, type in AHIMA salary survey. That will pop up for you and you can see the results of that survey. I believe they do a survey every 3 years or so, where AAPC, they also have a salary survey, and I believe AAPC conducts it annually. Again, Google AAPC salary survey and you'll be able to find that. Now, even using salary surveys, you have to remember that these are, you know, averages. It's looking at a sample of people in the profession. It obviously isn't capturing everyone out there who's working in the profession. And there's a wide range of salaries. And even though the salary surveys can be helpful, you have to remember that where you live is going to be a factor in how much money you can expect to make. Obviously, if you live in a huge metropolitan area, salaries are going to be higher than if you live in a rural area, for example. Cost of living is a factor in salaries. It just is. Also, often size of employer can also be a factor, where larger organizations have the ability to pay higher salaries. A smaller employer may not. For example, physician offices may not have the ability to pay high salaries like a hospital would have the ability to pay. And that's not a one size fits all. I'm not saying you can't get paid well in a physician practice, because you absolutely can. I'm just saying, generally speaking, size of the employer tends to be a factor. Of course, also experience is a factor. If you are coming into the profession and you are looking at entry-level positions probably are going to be around $13, $14 an hour, $15 an hour. That's just a reality, in the profession when you're coming in at entry level. But you can work your way up and you can increase your earnings pretty quickly. If you look at the salary surveys for AHIMA and AAPC, they're pretty impressive with the money that experienced people make. And these experienced people were not always experienced. They had to start somewhere. You know, my first job, I mean, this goes back to the 90s, so, you know, now starting salaries would be higher. But my first job in medical records, I made $5.25 an hour. So that was not a heck of a lot of money. And then when I like made my way up to like $7.50 an hour, I thought I had like hit the jackpot. But when I would change jobs, I would jump from one job to another. Some jobs I would get a $10,000 pay increase from one job to another. So it's really just getting the experience and working your way up. And then you can earn the large, you know, paycheck. You know, when people are discouraged and they say, like, I saw a post recently on social media, someone said that she needed to make more money, so she was considering leaving the coding profession. And when I saw that post, that kind of broke my heart. I'm like, this profession, you can earn so much money in this profession if you go to the right places and you manage your career properly. There are plenty of coders out there who are making low end, $60,000 a year, $70,000, $80,000. I mean, people making six figures. I mean, it's a thing. Victoria Mall, I've mentioned her before. A while back, she did a YouTube video on the six-figure medical coder. It exists. It absolutely exists. So I feel like if you're in medical coding, if you have experience, if you're doing it, there are a lot of opportunities out there. If you know exactly how to navigate the industry and like know where to look. A lot of times vendors are going to pay a larger salary. Not in all cases, but vendors tend to pay very well when they are hiring coders. And I am just amazed at the number of coding positions that I see advertised these days. Obviously during COVID, coding, you know, was deeply affected and coders were being furloughed and laid off. And there were coders without work. And that was shocking because that's something that, you know, I never thought I would see happen in healthcare. Medical coders have job security. They're not going anywhere. Well, when procedures aren't being done, they have nothing to code. And so that was a problem. But now I just see this explosion of like coding jobs that are like available out there. So anyway, there are definitely a lot of opportunities to make good money in coding and in HIM. And again, those salary surveys are going to show you that, that it is a possibility, but it's a matter of coming up with a career plan and sticking with it. Take a job. Sometimes you have to take a job at a lower, you know, amount of pay when you're starting out. Get your experience. You don't have to stay at that job. Get experience, then look for your next opportunity. And then also with salary, remember that credentials can also be a factor as well in determining the amount of money that you make. So when you're looking at salary, I know it's a huge consideration. People have bills they have to pay. I get that. I understand it. But sometimes you have to take a step back before you can move forward. There are some people who are currently working in positions where they're making good money and they want to switch over to like health information management positions or coding positions. And they say, I have to take a pay cut to get an entry level position. And sometimes you may need to do that to advance your career in the new direction, in the new profession. And then sometimes you'll have to make lateral moves before you move up the ladder. For me, I would have to take a step back. I wouldn't even, so I was going to say, I guess I'd have to take a lateral move. It wouldn't even be lateral. I'd be taking steps back. Let's say if I decided I wanted to become an HIM director, no one is going to hire me as an HIM director. Doesn't matter that I have the successful business in my space. I have never worked in an acute care. No, I did work in an acute care hospital as a charge auditor. I was going to say I never did, but in a traditional HIM position, I've never worked in the acute care setting. And no one's going to hire me to do that. I would have to take a step down. Probably I might be able to get hired possibly as an HIM supervisor, HIM manager, maybe, but I would have to take that step down to then go do what I want to do. And sometimes those are the sacrifices that we have to make. Another important area to research is cost. That should always be taken into consideration when entering a profession. Obviously, the biggest cost that you are going to have associated with your career is going to be your schooling. So you want to make sure that you choose wisely because not all programs are created equal. And I already touched on that briefly in what I've already shared, so I'm not going to go through that again in detail, but you will want to make sure that the school is properly accredited. If you want to sit for the RHIA, RHIT, you're looking for KHIM accreditation. If you are doing a program through a private school, you want to make sure that any coursework that you do in that school, it's transferable credit to a college or a university. You want to ask those questions. You also want to know if a school offers job placement assistance, what is their success rate in job placement assistance. But please, please, please do your homework on schooling. There are people who come out of medical coding programs who have spent a lot of money, and then they have a very difficult time finding a job. I'm not sure what the current rates are in private schools now for coding programs, but years ago, I think I talked about this in the first episode of my podcast, my experience as an instructor in one of those private technical schools, and they were charging back then, that would have been in 2003, I want to say was the year, 2002 actually, I believe it was 2002, they were charging $14,500 for 1 year of their coding program. And I felt that was criminal to charge that much for a coding program when they could go enroll in a community college and pay one third of that at the community college and come out with an associate's degree. Going through the 1 year program at the private school, you didn't have a degree and none of that was transferable. And you had students who had come out of that, who would come out of that program having pulled loans to pay for that. So then they're paying back loans and they're not able to get jobs because of where they went to school. So that's just something to keep in mind. Or fly-by-night coding programs, become a medical coder in like 8 weeks, 16 weeks, whatever. That's just not something that you should even pay any attention to because it's just flat out not going to happen. If you have no coding experience, you're not in the field, you can't take some boot camp crash course and become a coder and find a job. That's just not realistic. And there are a lot of companies out there that actually will make those kind of promises. And we've all seen it, the ads, you know, the work from home medical coders, the mom holding the baby in her lap, you know, with her laptop, you know, typing on the laptop with the other hand. It's just not realistic. But they do, these institutions, I use that term lightly, know what people want. And so they play to that. And unfortunately, people spend money on various programs that they're not educated properly, and they don't have the ability to find a job when they finish. You also want to consider the cost of credentials. You know, there is a cost for credential maintenance. Initially, you're going to have the cost of your certification exam. The cost for different certification exams vary, but generally you're talking anywhere from like $300 to $400 for a credential exam fee. Could be more, some are higher than that. So you'll want to be mindful of that. And then you'll also want to look at the cost of maintenance. How much is it going to cost you to maintain your credentials? Obviously, for every credential you have continuing education units that are required. And there are a lot of options out there where you can earn free CEs. for a lot of things, but they may not pertain specifically to what you're doing, like on your job. So you may be able to check the box, hey, I like, you know, earned all these CEs, but what did you get from it? What educational benefit did you get from those free CEs? If you're just doing it to say, oh, I did my CEs and now I'm like moving on. You want to look for CEs that pertain to what you do or what you want to be doing like in the future and invest money in those opportunities. So while you can get CEs for free, you also should consider paying for some good quality targeted CEs. Now you also need to consider membership fees as well. For example, AAPC requires that you are a member of their organization in order to maintain your credential through them. So every year you have to pay a membership fee to AAPC in addition to earning your continuing education credits, which are due every 2 years. So even though you report every 2 years, you're paying a membership fee every year. I'm actually getting ready to pay my membership fee this month, and that's $180, and that is to maintain my CIRCC credential. Now, with the CIRCC credential, there are additional costs associated with that because AAPC restricts CE offerings to only three vendors. There are only three companies that are allowed to offer CIRCC CEUs. So that makes the cost of maintaining that credential more expensive than maintaining some of the other credentials because you don't have the number of free CE opportunities out there because these are, you only have three companies that are able to offer them. So those are things that you need to take into consideration. When you're looking at a credential, look at what you need to do to maintain the credential and estimate the cost for maintaining the credential. I see a lot of people in the profession who have credentials and they're frustrated with the cost of membership and they're frustrated with the cost of CEs. And I get that, especially if you're having trouble finding a job, but this is something that before you go into a career, you need to be aware of and you need to be prepared to pay these fees. Also, you may need to purchase certain resources on your own to do a particular job. For example, if you're working as a 1099, you will probably have to have your own books and your own references at your disposal. So that would be an investment. And then one other thing that you don't necessarily have to factor into your costs, but I highly recommend, is that you pay money to a resume writing company. Let them help you develop that first resume, that initial resume. Or if you haven't looked for a job in a while, let's say you've been in the same position for 10 years and now you've been laid off and now you're looking for a job, spend some money with some professionals that can help you get that resume perfect. I see a lot of resumes that people send to me as a potential employer, and trust me, resumes need work. Also, communications when you're sending in your resume, that needs work too, in what I see. If what you can do and get free advice is if you're working with recruiters, recruiters often will give you free advice on improving your resume because recruiters want to send your resume to their clients and then hopefully get you placed. So that's a way to get free advice on a resume is to work with a recruiter to find a job. So after you've done all the research that you can on your own, you then want to connect with other people who are doing the job. You want to find people who are doing what you want to do, and you want to ask them lots of questions. Ask them about their career path. How did they get from point A to point B? Ask them for advice on the best path towards meeting the qualifications for that job. Find people on LinkedIn. That, I think, is a valuable resource that is so overlooked by people in our profession. And I understand why, because for a long time, LinkedIn was kind of crappy. And I signed up for a LinkedIn account many, many years ago, never went on LinkedIn, didn't spend time on LinkedIn, had no interest in it. I thought it was a waste of time. But with all of the changes that LinkedIn has made recently, it's definitely a very valuable place to go and network with other professionals. And I think I'm gonna do a podcast just about LinkedIn and how you can use LinkedIn. That's been on my topic list. I'll probably do that like in the next month or two, like share some tips on LinkedIn, because I feel that people need to embrace it, need to get on LinkedIn, and need to take advantage of it. So you want to get on LinkedIn. If you already have, you know, an account set up, great. In the episode I do on LinkedIn, I'll talk about how to make your profile better and just some basics you need to do. But if you're on LinkedIn, you want to find people who are doing what you want to do. When you go on LinkedIn, you can search by job title. So you can look for people who have the job title that is the same title as your dream job. You can connect with them. You can also look by employer. If there's a particular place that you'd like to work, you can search out. A lot of employers will actually have LinkedIn pages. You can follow the employer, but connect with people who work for that organization. Start talking to them, interacting with them, networking with them. Also, attend professional association meetings. That is huge. When you attend professional association meetings, that's a great way to network. And then you'll hear about jobs that are open from people, you know, when you're looking for jobs, and you get to talk to a whole diverse group of professionals who are doing a lot of different things in the profession. And you'll find out about positions that you didn't even know existed. And so that's just, for me, I have spent most of my career volunteering at, you know, the local level, state level, and national level, and just the networking opportunities and just the information that you get from other professionals is just invaluable. You can't even, you know, attach a dollar amount to that. So that's another thing that you want to do. So LinkedIn is the easiest thing to do and get started on. And then attending professional association meetings. Now that everybody's back to meeting in person, mostly, that should be like a little bit easier. So find people who are doing what you want to do and ask them questions. LinkedIn is a great place. Professional association meetings are a great place. Also, see if you can find any career shadowing opportunities or volunteer at a particular place of employment. Sometimes hospitals will take volunteers. That's one way to get in and learn more about potential job opportunities, get exposure to potential job opportunities. And career shadowing opportunities, if you can find someone who works in a current position who's willing to let you come hang out with them for the day, you know, let you see what a typical day is like and kind of give you some insight into their day, that's very helpful. Now, I have to say, in health information management and coding, it can be challenging because we're all dealing with patient information and confidential information. So it doesn't lend itself well as easily to stuff like that. But sometimes you can get opportunities like that. And sometimes career shadowing can help you like rule out something that maybe you're considering. I think I may have told this in an earlier podcast, but in high school, one of the career choices that I was looking at was becoming an attorney and practicing business law. And then I went and did career shadowing with a judge. They couldn't find an attorney for me to career shadow. But I went and did career shadowing with a judge and spent the day with a judge who did civil law. So there was, you know, some similarities there to business law. And I was so incredibly bored the whole entire day. And I got to see kind of the whole process because you're observing attorneys, you're seeing attorneys like in the courtroom and, you know, you get to sit in on a lot of different things. So you're getting exposure to really the whole process. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't for me. And it made me change my mind on that. So see if there's someone who's willing to let you come and spend a day with them just to see what they do. Now, once you have education, but you lack experience, look also for internship opportunities. You can sometimes find those. AHIMA has an apprenticeship program that you can apply for. And so they have apprenticeship opportunities for coders, for clinical documentation improvement specialists, business analysts, and data analysts. Again, if you go to Google and Google that, AHIMA apprenticeship program, you'll find information about that. AAPC also has Project Extern that they have to help you get an internship for medical coding. From what I hear, those are challenging to get, that there is not a ton of them there. But from my understanding is if there's somebody that you would like to intern for a coding internship, that employer can work with AAPC to become part of Project Extern. So I believe that's something that's doable. So look for internship opportunities. Are they difficult to find? Yes, they are. And just a side note here, there are some hospital systems that I've seen over the years develop like a grow your own coder program. so to speak, where they will take newer, professionals, new grads, those newly credentialed coding professionals, and they will train them. So there are job opportunities out there that are like that in some places. And so continuing with the discussion on connecting with others, it's never too soon to find a mentor. Look for a mentor in your field. And you can find a mentor LinkedIn. You may organically connect with a mentor. You may find somebody that you just click with and who's willing to offer you career advice. AAPC has a mentorship program that you can participate in. AHIMA also has a mentor match program. Now, they've had mentoring programs off and on for years. When I went to their website recently, they mentioned their mentor match program is launching later in the year. So I think they're redoing their mentor program from what I understand. And then you also have your component state associations with AHIMA. Some of them do mentoring programs. For example, I'm a member of the Florida Health Information Management Association. We have a mentoring program that you can apply to be a part of, and they will match you with a mentor. So look for a mentor early, and you may find more than one mentor. There's nothing wrong with having multiple mentors. And then also regarding connecting with others, connect with recruiters in the field. Ask them for career planning advice. Follow them on social media, and you will know when there are job openings, and a lot of them will give you career planning advice. If you contact a recruiter and you tell them what you're looking for, and ask them, do you have anything for me? They may not have anything for you right now, but they will give you tips on what you can do to build your resume and what they're looking for. So they can actually be very helpful in guiding you in your career. Now, take the advice that a recruiter gives you. Take it very seriously. Don't get upset about it. Don't get offended over it if you're a newer professional. Early on in my career, I had contacted a prominent recruiter, and when I had a conversation with him, I was kind of ticked off after the conversation. I wasn't really happy about what he had shared with me during the phone call, but because it was very different from conversations that I had with other recruiters. But it didn't take me long to realize that his advice was spot on. I didn't like what he was telling me, but he ultimately was right. And these other recruiters that were advising me were not. They were simply trying to push me in front of clients and get me a job so they could get their commission and they could get paid. They were pushing me towards things that I didn't even feel like I was personally qualified for. So you may get some harsh feedback and some harsh criticism, but embrace it and learn from that. And finally, one of the last things I want to talk about is evaluating an employer. And that may be something that comes further down, particularly if you are just starting out in the profession, but you want to evaluate an employer because I feel like who you work for is just as important as the work that you are doing. And I feel this is important because the right job with the wrong employer can turn your dream job into a nightmare. I have worked for some very interesting people over the years, in different positions that I have held. And so while you may enjoy the work that you're doing, you may not enjoy who you are working for. So when you're evaluating an employer, people think about job interviews, obviously the employer is getting to know you in a job interview, but you want to get to know the employer in a job interview. And if you can, talk to people who currently work for the employer that you're considering. If you can talk to people who are in that department that you want to go into, that is like huge. That can be of great value to you. To get a feeling for the morale in that department and whether or not people are happy there. So some questions, if you can get them answered, when you're interviewing for a position, is it a new position? If not, why did the current person leave? Why are they leaving? Maybe they're leaving for a better opportunity, possibly. When you ask questions, you want to kind of look for red flags where there might be potential problems. How long were they in the position? The person before them, how long were they in the position? Those are just some questions. You may not get answers to these, but I think that they're questions worth asking. You also want to know if there's opportunity for advancement within the company. You want to know whether or not they provide any continuing education at all. Do they pay for continuing education credits? Do they allow you time off from work to go to conferences, to go to professional meetings, to earn continuing education credits? Some employers make their employees take PTO time to go to a convention or a meeting during the day. They do not actually pay you for the time there. Some will pay for your continuing education credits, some will not. Do they pay for professional dues? Some pay for professional dues, some do not. And then tuition reimbursement. If you're even considering furthering your education at the college level, you want to find out if they offer tuition reimbursement and how much that tuition reimbursement is. Most of my college was paid for by my employer. I contributed very little. My associate's degree was fully paid for by my employer, and my bachelor's degree was almost all entirely paid for by my employer through tuition reimbursement. So that's something that you definitely want to inquire about. So like I said, it's important. Who you work for is just as important as the work that you are doing. So make sure you do your homework there and talk to as many people as possible who currently work for that employer. And then also bring a list of questions to your interview should you get a job interview. But start doing your research before you even get a job interview, and then you'll be way ahead of the game. So overall, I think the most important piece of advice I can provide to you, if you're listening, is to never give up on your dream. No matter what it is, no matter what you want to do, keep pushing forward. Those people that I see that are very successful and thriving in this field, health information management or medical coding, those are the people who did not give up. They kept pressing forward. So it comes down to how bad do you want it and what sacrifices are you willing to make? You have to be willing to do sometimes what others are not. But if you desire to have a long career in health information management or medical coding, it is possible. If you want to make a good salary as a medical coder or as an HIM professional, it is entirely possible. So I encourage you to keep going, keep pressing on. It will be worth it. And then develop your plan. I just gave you a bunch of tips on what you should do as far as your research is concerned. And once you've done all your research, sit down and say, this is where I want to be in 1 year. These are the steps I can take to get there. This is where I want to be in 3 years. These are the steps I can take to get there. And then do a 5 year and a 10 year and so on. And of course, you want to set your goals accordingly, with each of the plans, the 1, the 3, the 5, the 10, and then use that to guide you and make your decisions. So I just want to recap quickly before I wrap up some of the resources that I mentioned in the podcast. The American Health Information Management Association, take a look at their salary survey. Also take a look at their Career Assist Job Bank, also their career map, their apprenticeship program, and then their mentor match program, which is launching later in the year. Be on the lookout for that. And then with AAPC, go out and take a look at their salary survey, their mentorship program, their medical coding jobs database, and their AAPC Project Extern program as well. That's all I have to share in this episode. Before I go, I just want to remind everyone, if you have a question for me, you can send an email to Ask Stacy. That's Ask Stacy, STACIE, at radrx.com. I would love to add a segment to the podcast called Ask Stacy. So please send me your questions. The questions can be related to something I discussed in the podcast, or it can be something that isn't mentioned in the podcast. That's fine. I will certainly take questions on any topic that I feel qualified to provide an answer on. And if you just have general feedback that you want to give on the podcast or suggest a topic for a future episode, feel free to send that to podcast@radrx.com. Thank you for tuning in and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Who Cares What Stacy Says? You can connect with Stacy on social media. You can find her business page for RadRx on Facebook, and you can connect with her personally on LinkedIn. Don't forget to check out the online training courses offered by RadRx. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology Online Training, or Cracking the Diagnostic Radiology Code Online Training. Thanks again for tuning in to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level.